B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Our tour of the program. As Murray mentioned, Caesars Sportsbook has their NFL win totals out. And for the lowest or the first time since 2003, the Patriots are under 9 wins. 8.5 over-under win total for the upcoming season. 8.5, the team's lowest win total or projection since 2003. 8.5 over-under. Maz?
Under.
Murray?
Under.
Over.
Over. Over.
That's interesting, though. 2003, they won the Super Bowl that year.
They sure did. Yeah, I mean, talk about a bad projection there. That was a good team. But coming off of 2000, you know, it's so dependent off of what you're coming off of. Unless something crazy happens, like you lose the greatest player of all time, which the Patriots have. So they go from 12-4 to an over-under at Caesars to 8.5. Pound the over. Pound it. And I'm, you know, I still think, you know, I have them at 9 wins, so I like, should I be pounding? But I still think, I don't know, I feel good about over 8.5. They've always been good in this spot. Just when you think they're not going to do it, that's when they do it. And I know that's the Brady-Belichick Patriots. Will it apply to just the Belichick Patriots? Ah, that's the beauty. We find out. The chief odds maker at Caesars told ESPN, quote, and his name's Jeff Davis. Jeff Davis says, my raw number on the Patriots is even less than 8. He says, outside of the secondary, which is still one of the best in the league, the rest of their roster, I think, is one of the worst in the NFL. Is there a roster outside of the secondary one of the worst in the NFL?
I mean, I'd have to think about that, but he might be right.
I mean, they're not good at linebacker. They're decent on the defensive line. They're okay. They're good on the offensive line.
They are?
I mean, they had a down year last year, but just the year before, those guys were awesome.
I'm not giving you that one. Sorry.
So, quarterback, complete question mark. Running backs, who cares? Pass catchers, not good.
Stink.
Yeah, they have a bottom roster, that's for sure, outside of the secondary.
Anyway, he's a great punter.
Anyway, they write that the Patriots under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady had been prolific for bettors. They covered the spread almost 60% of the time in games. And in terms of their over-under, their preseason over-under win total, you know, in the last 18 years, they went 14-3-1 since 2002. 14-3-1 against the posted win total coming into the year. Under Brady and Belichick. How about that? So other sports books like MGM, FanDuel, and William Hill have New England's win total at 9, while at DraftKings, who bring you Felger and Mass here on 95 The Sports Hub and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston, DraftKings has them at 9.5. There's a middle to play there, right? Can't you play that middle? Pound it? I'm sure there's odds there, too, though. I'm sure there's a money line attached to it, like it's, you know, Patriots in the under, minus 120, or, you know, whatever. Like they put money lines on them. Davis, so back to the chief odds maker at Caesars. He says, I'm very much struggling to find this team being a 10-win team. I'm just not buying this team at all. This team will show just how good Belichick and his staff are compared to some other staffs. This might be the year that really sets in with New England. The Bills, by the way, have a win total at Caesars at 9. They are a plus 100 favorite to win the AFC East, with New England coming in next at plus 140. Would you rather bet the Bills at plus 100 or the Patriots at plus 140 to win the AFC East, Maz?
Patriots. And again, I factor in the number there, too. But, Mike, I can't remember the last time we talked about the league when we did a big picture topic like this. But one of the things that I remember is that most of the prognosticators have the AFC East being bunched together somewhere between 6 and 10 and 9 and 7. In other words, I don't think that anybody looks at the AFC East and sees any sort of, you know, wagon in there, any sort of real threat to win the championship in the entire division. And what concerns me most about the Patriots is that road schedule. So I wouldn't touch anybody in the AFC, frankly.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins won the division.
Patriots plus 140 is the bet, the value of it, the value of it. By the way, Tom Brady's new team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, over under of 9. So Caesars projects them just a half game better than the Patriots, which is interesting. Would you rather bet the Buccaneers +9 or the Patriots +8.5? Meaning
Tampa
over 9 or over 8.5?
Tampa.
Tampa.
Easy.
Okay. And I, you know what? I would actually agree with that. I think the Buccaneers are a better bet to be over 9 than the Patriots are to be over 8.5, but I have them both over. I have them both over. The highest win totals on the board are the Chiefs and Ravens, both at 12. Ravens over under 12.
Under.
Oh, over.
Under. Under. Coming down. Coming down to earth. And I'd even project a Lamar Jackson injury in the first half of the season. So Ravens under, Chiefs. Chiefs under. I'll go under both of those. Frankly,
so I'll tell you, of the Chiefs, I would want to see what the schedule is before I decide that. I need to know who they're playing in terms of their rotating division schedule.
I just feel like that's a team. I don't know. Do they have the maturity, professionalism, you know, discipline to come back from a year on top after, you know, all that's going on this offseason and into this extended offseason? Does Andy Reid have firm enough control of that roster for them to come back having done the right things, being prepared, all of that? I don't see it.
Yeah, they got hosed on the coin toss and went back and won the Super Bowl. If it wasn't for the coin toss, they go to 2 straight Super Bowls. So I think that they've already proven their intestinal fortitude.
Yeah. The other thing aren't they bringing back virtually their entire offense, like unscathed, right? I think they lost one guy. They're bringing back 10 of the 11 starters on offense, and their two, I just looked it up, their two rotating divisions are the NFC South and the AFC East. So I think they get a light schedule. I go over.
Okay, we continue with your thoughts. Bill Belichick, 68 years old today. Happy birthday, Bill. Happy. But we're just sort of driving home the point. I don't think people appreciate how old that is when you consider how long these coaches last and how long they win at a high level for. Bill, if you're going by historical comparisons, is past his prime. But I don't think he is as a coach. I worry more about Bill, the GM. Evan in Boston. Go ahead, Evan.
Hey, guys. So I wanted to, put together the conversation on Bill today with his comments on Brady the other day. Water under the bridge. And I think that is proof that he has not lost his fastball, at least as far as coaching is concerned. I mean, to me, his toughest challenge this year is program and buy-in. And if he salivates all over Brady on the way out the door, what does that do?
Well, so
players on the team.
Evan, I agree that his handling of Brady isn't different than what he's done in the past. Like, I think these guys look at it and say Bill's lost some interpersonal skills, maybe lost the locker room a little bit, and the way Brady ended and Gronkowski ended is a sign of that. And I didn't mention it earlier, but I disagree, Maz. And it's not a good story. He's been brutal in this regard forever. Like, when he had the Bernie Kosar transition in Cleveland, it was a debacle. When he moved on from Bledsoe early on here, Bledsoe, that wasn't quite the debacle it was in Cleveland, but it wasn't smooth. It wasn't smooth at all. And now here's Brady, and it's more pettiness and not being able to connect. And I think the way he's handled Brady on the way out the door is entirely consistent with what he's always done.
Okay, what about the decision to not play Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl?
Bad, but he's been petty and personal like that, I think, his whole... I think there's been examples like that before, and if I search my memory back in the early part of the dynasty, I'm sure, you know, he had a thing for Ted Johnson, held it against him, you know, early on in his career here, and I could pick out some others if I go back and think about it. He had favorites, played favorites, maybe not on that stage. You know, I'm going to sit you out to prove a point in front of the world. Like, that was a bad one, and that was above and beyond. But he's always been kind of petty, and like every human being, he makes it personal sometimes, and that's caused him to make mistakes over his career. I think that's been consistent.
Okay, I just think the Butler one's a big one. And again, all I'm telling you is that there is a human element to this thing that I think applies to just about everybody. And that is, the deeper you get, the more accomplished you are, the more you think you can get away with. And I think that is always a dangerous thing. And Butler in the Super Bowl, I'm sorry. That one to me left a mark.
Okay, but
so I and the reality is, and I know they've won since, they also caught a couple of breaks. You want to tell me the Brady thing is, you know, a breakup, and he's had breakups, is fine. But in a game, in a championship game, benching Malcolm Butler and never putting him on the field, big mistake.
Horrible. What, one of his worst, top three. Number one, probably.
Might be number one, right.
Number one, okay, but is that a sign of age, Maz? Or is that just an a-hole move that caught up to him? Because he won the championship the very next year. and then went 12-4 the year after that. So was the Butler decision a sign of decline, age?
I think it might be a sign of age, yeah, because I think a lot of guys end up becoming petty, cantankerous grumps as they get older, and that's what I think, you know, that's where age has been a detriment to Belichick.
My point is, he was a petty, cantankerous grump at 35, never mind 65. Like, he's always been this guy.
Okay, and Brady's probably always been needy, but it got worse. And so I think that what happens is when you get, you advance, that your strengths and weaknesses get amplified and that they show up a little more. I just wonder, and not to mention the element of his son being on the staff, and maybe that related to the Butler thing and maybe it didn't. But I think you just introduce elements and priorities change a little bit. And look, Mike, if there's anyone that can withstand it, it's him. I'm not telling you that it's an absolute. I'm just giving you my opinion. That decision in the Super Bowl defies logic. It is for a guy who puts as much emphasis on doing what is best for the team and winning to get into that game and make that decision. I think really suggests that something changed at least a little bit in how he perceives it.
John in Worcester, your thoughts?
Yes. First of all, as a sexagenarian myself, I don't appreciate all this tales from the crip crap from you whippersnappers. But that said, Bell, I was thinking about what you mentioned earlier in the show about what if Kraft turned around Belichick's reasoning about getting rid of Brady on him. And I think what that would do is that would tilt the argument about who was more valuable in the Super Bowls, Brady or Belichick. That would tip it in Belichick's favor. Because I think if Kraft dumped Belichick, other teams would be lining up to pay the guy.
I do too. I do too, but I thought that about Brady too. And no one lined up. No one lined up. I think it would be different for Bill. But I don't know. I overshot Brady's value. Who knows if I'm overshooting Bill's value too. This I do know. No one's won a Super Bowl at his age. No one's hardly gone to the Super Bowl at his age. There's only one other coach who's gone to a Super Bowl at his age, and that was Marv Levy the very last time. Coaches at his age don't win. The last time any football coach won a championship of any kind at 68 was George Halas in 1963. Papa Bear Halas in the early 60s. That's the last. Football coaches don't win at his age. Shula didn't. Parcells didn't. Gibbs didn't. They were out of the game. But Lombardi never even got close to that age. Guys aren't that old to win in the NFL. And so if he does it, it will be defying all those parameters that they've defied to this point. But I don't know if people fully appreciate that as Bill turns 68 today. We continue the conversation right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Do you also anticipate or expect Coach Belichick to coach into his 70s?
I hope he coaches till his 80s. I see Warren Buffett and Rupert Murdoch, and they're in their mid-80s, and they're performing at a pretty high level. So we got to keep Bill healthy.
So that was Robert Kraft a couple of years ago. Is that the Super Bowl, Jimmy? The Rams Super Bowl?
The date on it is March 27th, 2017.
So it was the owners' meetings after the Rams Super Bowls. I have that right?
Right.
So that's easy to say coming off a Super Bowl. I hope he coaches to his 80s. What if Stidham can't play? They go 4-12 and then are flailing around for quarterback the next year and he hasn't drafted well and then they're 5-11. What if they go 4-12, 5-11? Is Robert Kraft going to let him coach till his 80s? Is Robert Kraft going to even let him coach a third year after blowing Brady out of here? and, you know, carrying on the way he carries on, is there any way Bill makes it to a third season if there's 2 4-12s on the table?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to me, it depends on. Go ahead, Murray. Go ahead.
Well, it's like, Maz, you said earlier, like the clock's ticking. I think that's, you know, now it's going to be an assessment going forward. They'll get it past this season if it's ugly. But beyond that, I think it's now like, well, I don't know, if it's sub 500 in 2021, it might be, he might get one more season. And if Jonathan takes over, that timeline might even be shorter.
Yeah, I think you got to see how it looks, too, because if it's a quarterback issue, Mike, then in a lot of ways, that might even work in Belichick's favor. In other words, you know, Kraft is going to look at it and say, well, we got to find the quarterback, but Bill's not the problem. And if I go bring in another coach, he's going to be worse than Bill because he's not going to be able to get what Bill gets out of the roster. So I'm not trying to have it, but I do think that it's the next thing that ownership looks at, is that we the quarterback thing's now over. Now they're looking for the next guy. Maybe it's Stidham, maybe it isn't. But if the thing starts to deteriorate or doesn't get better, then I think the logical thing is to turn to the coach. I think we're sort of entering that phase now.
You're also using straight logic. And the way things I would factor in are the way Bill carries himself. Not an easy guy to work with. Mm-hmm. And you'll definitely put up with it for the results because, you know, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. So he's an a-hole. He doesn't treat us well. And we may not really like him a lot of the time. Tough guy to be in the building with. But if he's winning championships, yeah, fine. We'll put up with it. If you're 4-12, you don't put up with it. Like, that's the whole point. So then there's that. And
it's a good point.
He's also got to be the highest paid guy in sports. I mean, their crafts aren't going to be doing that. They're not going to pay, you know, who do they pay at the top of the market who sucks? They don't do that with any player. You think they do that with the coach if he puts together a couple of clunkers together? So I think those two factors, they're going to look at it and say, you know, you ain't the easiest guy to work with, pal, and we pay you through the nose. So Bill's not going to have the leeway that some other coaches might have. He's going to be on a shorter rope. And again, he turned 68 today. If he wants to catch Shula, he'll probably coach till he's 73.
Just, well, boy, how about that scenario after all that? Bill Belichick going to guys as their play starts to slip and saying, well, you know, we're going to have to redo the contract. What if Kraft goes to him and says, you got to take a pay cut now?
This is what I'm talking about. If I'm Kraft, I'm doing to Bill what Bill did to Brady, which is we all know your age and contract situation and dot, 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 you know, on notice, let's look. I mean, I don't know. It feels fair to me. So
there will be a lot of players laughing their asses off when that happens.
Your thoughts, Jerry in Murrayville. Yes, Jerry in Murrayville.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I was just curious would Jonathan and Mr. Kraft sit down with Bill and say, hey, we're going to go out and get ourselves a younger GM?
No. I mean, no. They may. Okay. I mean, the Krafts may want it. Bill would never put up with it, Jerry.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm saying. Like he would really put a stop into that.
Oh, he'd leave.
Okay. No, I was just wondering. Like he's getting older. He can still coach, but his knowledge and you know what's going on with the younger people, he doesn't seem to have a.
Well, I think he can coach the younger people, Jerry. The ability to pick them feels to me like that's been an issue. I mean, there's some young players who still, you know, they weren't necessarily drafted, but J.C. Jackson, I mean, go down the line. I think you've seen improvement from some young players on the team, like Joe Tooney, even Maz, you know. I know we want to give Skarnecchia credit for that, but I think young players have developed under Belichick. It's getting them in here. And just the bust outs, the guys that don't even stick around long enough to be developed, Duke Dawson, Cyrus Jones, et cetera, et cetera. Like, he's had such bad draft picks recently that the guys aren't even here long enough to be coached. They're just gone. Inside of 2 years.
And I mean, the talent drain's been a big problem. There's no question about it. They've deteriorated. The roster has deteriorated over the last several years. And with him, it all falls under the same umbrella, right? So it's hard to sometimes separate one from the other. To me, it feels like there's been a failing there. I'm eager to see what happens with some of these receivers. Because N'Keal Harry was a first-round pick. If N'Keal Harry can't play and they can't coach him up, and ooh, that's a big hit, especially with Michelle and Wynn, and if those guys don't pan out, because there is some talent there with those players.
Maz, I'd say the last two classes, if Harry or even Juwan Williams or Chase Winovich, you know, that grouping. If, you know, one of these two, could Juicy or Froholt don't turn into an offensive lineman? If Stidham isn't the quarterback, when Michelle, Duke Dawson's already gone for crying out loud. You know, if they don't get some of those guys to be something, that's trouble. And I'll tell you this, if the drafting doesn't turn around, Bill will not set the record here. How's that for a prediction if you want one?
No, I think that's fair, yeah.
Because, again, he's to catch Shula, it's 4 or 5 more years. And if his drafts continue to blow like they've blown, he can't put up 10, 11 wins a year.
The teams won't be good enough.
You know, he'll coach them up. He'll get a couple extra wins out of them a year. But maybe he's coaching a 6-win team to an 8-win team. It's not good enough. And he's not going to survive because he hasn't built up the goodwill, you know, just from a workability standpoint, never mind his contract. I mean, I know there's a whole he's got to turn around personnel-wise if he wants to catch Shula and still be the same guy here. Glenn in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, I'm glad to see you guys healthy. Just wanted to throw this out. I don't think the Pats have made a good draft pick since Scott Pioli left.
Oh, that's not true.
Oh, gosh.
That's not true at all. I mean, that's, you're just, Glenn, I'll let you go. Thanks for the call. But he's had, definitely, so Pioli left in 08, right? So,
oh, I mean, we could rattle off a million of them after right. that. Hightower, Jones, Gronk, Garoppolo. That's just off the top of my head.
I have it in front of me. Gronkowski, Nate Solder, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower.
20, just look at 2010 and 2012. Those are really great drafts.
Logan Ryan, Daron Harmon were good draft picks. Jamie Collins was a good draft pick. Jimmy Garoppolo was a good draft pick. Even something like Brian Stork was a decent draft pick. Shaq Mason turned into a good player. Trey Flowers in the fourth round was an excellent draft pick. Joe Tooney in the third round turned into a good draft pick. So he's made them. It's just the last couple of years. He hasn't picked a Pro Bowler, though, since Jamie Collins in 2013. That's a staggering stat.
Oh, gosh, is it ever.
Only the Patriots and the Bengals. There's only two teams that haven't come up with one Pro Bowler in the last 6 drafts, and it's them and the Bengals.
What an indictment. The freaking Bengals. Ugh.
Okay. You never want to be mentioned in the same breath when it comes to personnel with the Bengals.
Albert in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Albert.
How's it going, guys? It's really amazing how a narrative can be spun because a lot of New Englanders loved about Belichick was, you know, he's kind of a hard ass. And, you know, Belichick won't deal with you. You act like a douche. So he sat Malcolm Butler for some reason. But what they won't talk about is the fact that Brady had a strong side fumble to lose the game. And what other people won't talk about when you say about Belichick losing his touch, 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, Brady did not have a good season. They did not play well against good teams. And in the playoffs, he completely outclassed Anthony Lynn, which I'm not saying is much. And then he put McVay in a vice grip. I mean, they scored 13 points in Super Bowl and won. So Belichick hasn't lost any touch. You guys just want to create justification, and you want to create a story because you want to...
You think his personnel work has been good, Albert? You think his drafting and free agency has been good the last handful of years?
No, Felger. No, it hasn't, Felger, but that's natural. That happens to everybody. You see the ups and downs of drafting. It's not a science.
Well, let's
even
see.
The greatest coach of all time.
Albert, this is why I'm saying it better turn around quick because then it's not just a slump. It's what it is. You understand?
Fair point.
Okay, there it is. Fair point. We reached some common ground. There better be, you know, just to use the parlance of what you've heard quite a bit, this better be a U-shaped recovery coming up pretty quick. Because if it's just an L, a backwards, you know, then that ain't, Bill's got to get better at drafting. Or else it's not a slump, it's what it is, it's decline.
And I mean, to me, that's part of the reason why we were talking earlier. You say to me, what were the best years? I go back to that, you know, 2010 to 2014 window, because I thought that, you know, he basically rebuilt it again on the fly. Now, Brady was still here, but he overhauled the whole thing and reinfused it, and they were able to inject new players and, you know, in some years along the way, put up great seasons, relatively speaking, now with minimal talent. That 2010 team that lost to the Jets, they were not a 14-2 team. I'm sorry. And then again, as Murray said, they got to the Super Bowl the next year. So, but now he's got to do it a third time. And now it's harder because he doesn't have Brady.
So I just want to address the thing he said about the Eagles Super Bowl. Like, how come people don't get on Brady for the strip sack? I mean, they should some, but I still hold Bill way more responsible for that game. And I'll tell you why. And if you just, you know, leave out the 500 passing yards and the 37 points or whatever they scored in that ball game, you know, the offense still put up a big number. Take that out and just go to the strip sack. That's a physical mistake. Okay, that's a physical mistake that tends to happen. Bill Belichick's mistake was personal. It was a grudge. It was for all the wrong reasons, and still no one really knows. But was he protecting a family member? Was he, you know, was he serving some sort of personal agenda? Was he serving some sort of business grudge? You know, no one knows. It's somewhere in that category, though. And so that, you know, what Bill did wasn't a mistake. It wasn't like, oops, I benched the guy. I didn't mean to do that. No, that was an intentional, you know, subversion of what was best for the team. Brady was just a physical mistake that happened. So Bill has been criticized more for that game, and he should be, Maz. He should be.
Oh, no question. Look, again, he just let something personal get in the way of his judgment. I do wonder, though, because we don't talk a lot about that strip sack. How do you think Bill looks at the play?
I guarantee you at home, after he's had a couple, he says, Brady effed me on that. He had James White wide open coming out of the backfield. He didn't look at him, and we told him to look for the safety valve there, and he didn't, and he screwed me. I guarantee you Bill says that.
Yep, absolutely.
and Tom gets hammered and watches that and said, I shouldn't even have been put in this position to have to put up this many yards and try to come back because the defense got shredded in this game. Oh, and where was Malcolm Butler?
Or he says, nice block, Shaq. Was it Shaq Mason who blew
it? Yeah, Shaq Mason.
I think it was, yeah.
Was it Shaq Mason or Cannon who blew the...
No, Mason.
Who blew the coverage on that. So, I mean, this is what all those guys do. Like, they never think it's really their fault. Is, you know, you porked me on this and he porked me on that. Like, it's just sort of how they're wired. They're so competitive and sensitive to it. But, you know, us here on the outside, oh, no, Bill deserves the scarlet letter for that game, for the decision-making on Butler. We continue with this conversation all day. I love it. Bill turned 68, the age of the coach. Should we be looking at it like we looked at the age of the quarterback? Only being fair, right? We'll continue with that. We'll give you a Bruins Minute as well coming up right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
People are still holding out hope for some kind of abbreviated baseball season this summer. College football will start in late August, NFL right after that. Do you think those sports seasons are in jeopardy? Are we going to have college football this fall?
There's a way of doing that. Nobody comes to the stadium. Put them in big hotels, you know, wherever you want to play. Keep them very well surveilled, namely a surveillance, but have them tested like every week and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family and just let them play the season out. I mean, people say, well, you know, you can't play without spectators. Well, I think you'd probably get enough buy-in from people who are dying to see a baseball game, particularly me. I'm living in Washington. We have the world champion Washington Nationals. You know, I want to see them play again.
So there's that Anthony Fauci comment from the other day. It's gotten a lot of run, as it should, leaving the door open for these leagues, including the NHL. So if it works for baseball, it works for hockey, right? Same principle. I mean, they're in closer contact on the field of play, but be that as it may, same thing. No fans in the stands, quarantine hotels, etc. Gary Bettman was on Fox Business the other day, and he basically said, my guess at this point is that we're going to be playing into the summer, which is something we can certainly do. So that feels like a definitive sort of statement there, Maz. I mean, do you think that they're basically planning on it and this is going to happen for the NHL? Would you put it at over 50% the NHL comes back?
Well, I don't know that I'd put any sport over 50%, but I think they're all going to make a legitimate try at it. I don't think there's any question about that. I think they all feel like they have to.
The NHL, though, I will just say for other sports, there's just complications to it. And I'm talking financial complications. Like, they can figure out these biodomes and hamster cages, just like any other sport. Like, they'll find the places. They'll find some Republican governor in North Dakota to open up a couple hockey rinks for them, like baseball will in Arizona and Florida and all of this. So, I mean, they'll find that. I'm not worried about that part of it. The piece that's worrisome to me is making everyone happy from a financial standpoint because they're so dependent on the gate. And it's going to leave such a bigger mark in hockey than it will in other sports. And furthermore, the playoff issue, which I feel like all these teams that are outside of the playoff structure, 16 of the 31 for crying out loud, make it. But there were still seven other teams that were mathematically alive for the playoffs when they shut it down. And they're all pitching a fit, it sounds like to me. And it feels like, you know, Bettman is bending over backwards for these teams. He says, whatever we do to come back, and this is what I'm talking about, being agile and flexible, we're going to have to do something, whether it's complete the regular season in whole or in part, whether or not it's expanded playoffs, said Bettman. We're going to have to do something that's fair and has integrity. That's going to be very important no matter what it is we do. And we're considering all of the alternatives, and nothing has been ruled in and nothing has been ruled out. And, you know, this piece worries me, that is this why they're hanging on to the regular? So I don't mind them hanging on to the regular season, frankly. But this idea of the expanded playoffs, when 16 of the 31 already make, I've talked about this a lot. That just concerns me, Maz.
Well, the expanded playoffs to me are always stupid, and particularly under the circumstances. Now, look, if the league had played, 82 game schedule. Let's say they had played 30 games. I could then at least look at it and say they didn't play half the schedule. I mean, so you want to expand the playoffs because you haven't played half the season. I half get it. In this case, 70 games. This is the part that blows me away. Against Mike, we had a work stoppage in the NHL as recently as 7 years ago. And in that work stoppage season, which I think was a lockout, if I remember correctly, right? That was the owners.
Yep.
That was the owners cutting short the schedule. They settled on a 44-game season. They didn't expand the playoffs that year. The playoffs were as they always are. Everything was run the same way it's always been. So now that they have 68, 70 games played, and they're all somewhere in that window, basically, give or take a game, that now they get to that number and they have to play the full 82, or they're going to let more people into the playoffs? That, to me, is completely illogical. It's stupid.
No.
It doesn't make any sense, and I don't understand why he's trying to be so, quote-unquote, fair about it. It's what he should say is what all of us have had to hear. It's tough times for everyone. Everyone's had to make sacrifices, and so if you're a bubble team who was out by six or more points, tough. Sorry. We have a small timetable here. You're just going to have to understand you're not making the playoffs under, you know, these new circumstances.
Right, and there's two teams in particular. If you just want to boil it down to Montreal, because I still hate Montreal with every little fanboy fiber of my being, fine. It's a Montreal thing. 10 points out of the playoffs with 11 games to go for the Canadiens. But they are 10 points out of the playoffs, and the team that they're 10 points behind still has a game in hand on them, Columbus. They have no rights. And no cause to bitch or to be part of any sort of play-in or any sort of chance. You're out. And if anything that comes back gives Montreal a chance, I'm going to be pissed. That's going to piss me off.
Well, and so the more I hear Bettman talk about it, I frankly dispute his definition of the word fair or unfair. I think unfair is when the same rules don't apply to everybody. So if you want to tell me that they have to play some regular season games in order to balance out the discrepancy between teams that have played 71 games versus teams that have played 68, and they have to come up with a creative schedule to do that to get everybody back on the ice, fine. I get it. That is being fair. 71 versus 68 is unfair. I get it. But in terms of we have to let more teams into the playoffs now, why? You don't have to let more teams in. Everybody knew where the threshold was. You're within 10 games of the end of the regular season. I don't have any understanding at all as to why they have to do that.
Okay, so because again, I think Bettman's giving too much ear to those fringe teams. He's trying to make everyone happy, and you're not going to make everyone happy in these times.
Yeah, well, so, you know, the other thing is, the more that I think about it is, they're trying to recoup revenue.
And
so you let more playoff teams in, and I understand that there won't be fans in the stands, but maybe that gives them a little bit more TV product and they're able to reclaim some of the revenue. And I just think that that's a horrible way to water down the product.
So the other piece to it is the time it takes to get back. Like, you know, we talked about, you know, these NBA players want 4 to 6 weeks, which is like, I would say to those guys, give me a break, dude. Give me a break.
Too long.
Okay, way too long. And, you know, we looked at Tatum yesterday, saying he hasn't touched a basketball in a month, which to me is just it's abhorrent.
Right. That's on you for not buying a net.
Scary. But in hockey, the skating element is different. And I don't know how these guys haven't skated in a month, haven't put on skates or skated in a month, unless they're cheating something on the side, which, oh, by the way, I hope they are. I hope the Bruins, and this, if this makes me a bad person, then so be it. I hope the Bruins have gone to every player and slipped them the key to the Warrior Ice Arena, which still has a sheet, and they're telling these guys at 2 in the morning, we'll leave some lights on. You go out there and have a twirl and lock up on your way out. Because how do you play hockey and not put the skates on for 4, 5, 6 weeks and then skate? Like, that to me feels like a whole different deal. Longer ramp up period, like all of that. Like, I'm curious about that whole element to it. And that, you know, that's what's different about that sport than any other. And let's actually pick this up on the other side. Let's talk to Bobby Beers, shall we? Former NHL player. I'll ask him that very question. How long can you go without skating and then just jump on the ice and skate like an NHL player? That'll be one of the things we'll talk to Beersy about right after this.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Belger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
All right, let's get some help with this. As promised, Bob Beers, one of the voices of the Bruins here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Bobby joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Bobby, how you doing? I hope things are safe and well at your house.
Yeah, same with you guys. We're good here. Hopefully, the three of you and certainly all your listeners out there too, Mike. Crazy times, huh?
Crazy times. Yeah. So anyway, we're just trying to talk our way through it. Help me with that question that I had before I went to break. I don't know if you were listening. How long can an NHL player be off of skates before, and the length of time it takes to come back with skating? Like, that whole element to me. Like, when you played, Bobby, and you had the off season. How long would you go in the summer months or the off season without lacing up skates and hitting the ice? How long could you afford to go without doing that?
Yeah, I mean, it would depend on if you made the playoffs or not, right? But maybe a month or so. I think guys are a little bit more inclined to be on the ice maybe a month before camp. I think everybody's a little bit different, first of all, but it's hard to simulate the skating aspect of it. You know, you can do all the exercises you want, and you need, you know, in this situation right now, you need to continue to do those exercises to make sure that your cardio is as good as it can be. But you can't simulate what you do on the ice. You know, the quick cuts, the stopping and starting, the battles in the corners and things like that. You can't simulate that. I mean, that's when the legs really get heavy. You know, and the only thing I can kind of equate it to is when I was still playing in the mid-90s, we had a lockout. And we came back in January, late January, and we had a one-week training camp. Now, the biggest difference with that was that we were still skating in October, November, and December, waiting for the lockout to end. So we only had that 1 week training camp and we ramped right up into the games, but there was a big difference there, you know, because we had the ability to be on the ice.
Bobby,
so this is much different.
Is it, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to think this out in real time. The Warrior Ice Arena, is that a public building or a private building? Is there anything against the law to give a player a key to the Warrior Ice Rink? And I mean, is the sheet even still up? And have them go in by themselves into a private building and skate around the ice. Are they allowed to do that? Do you think they're doing that?
We've done some conference calls here with a couple of guys and with Bruce Cassidy, and he's a Warrior shutdown, or one of them said that, you know, Warrior shutdown. So I don't know who it's owned by, or I mean, if it's private or public, I'm not sure, but I think it's private. I don't think I think that everything there is shut down and that's not available to any of the players. That's the sense I get from the guys.
So, Bob, while we're on this topic, and again, we're all just kind of grasping here, but what about, I mean, I know now that they have these synthetic treadmills, right, that have synthetic ice surface you can simulate skating on a treadmill. I mean, A, have you done, can something like that really help in terms of conditioning, and B, do guys even have them? Like, what are their options?
I've never done that. I mean, You know, I heard Charlie Coyle saying yesterday, Peloton, and then, you know, do some stick handling. I've seen other players talk about, you know, biking and then doing some. We talked to Marchand this afternoon earlier, just got off the phone with him. And he actually was saying the same thing about you can't simulate, you know, skating. But he's doing some sprints, some things, some running, things like that. Just, you know, they're doing what they can. They've got some equipment. Some guys have gyms in their basement. Some guys have had stuff sent to them by their trainers or by the staff. So they're doing what they can. But this is just unprecedented. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, for me, it's hard to put a finger on. I mean, I know I'm not staying in any kind of shape. So.
I just think they should be able to sneak it. It's Bob Beers, 98.5 The Sports Hub, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Money question. Do you think the league's coming back this year, Bobby?
I'm trying to remain optimistic, Mike. I really am. The more you hear about it, the more it sounds like it's going to be more and more difficult to do it. I mean, playing games without fans, I mean, that's just, I guess there's a plus to it as far as the TV side goes. You know, I think NBC's contract's coming up here pretty soon, whether it's this year or next year. They want to get these games in somehow. But it is such a gate-driven league, right? I mean, with the fans that come in and, you know, in Boston's case, the fans, the concessions, the parking, you know, the pro shop and everything, the merchandising, all the restaurants around it. I mean, it's just, there's such a money-driven league with the fan base. And that I don't know how much they recoup by doing that. So they also have Seattle coming in here, you know, pretty soon. They want to try to get that, you know, they want to keep things money-wise where it should be. I don't know enough about it, to be honest with you. I know.
Have you heard anything? Have they told you anything? Heads up, be ready to go in July, August, and in North Dakota. No. You know, get your travel plans ready for Saskatoon. Like, have you heard anything, Bobby? You know, underneath, you know, behind the scenes.
No, just what you, same thing you guys are reading, to be honest with you. We really don't have any information, and it doesn't sound like many other people do either. It's changing on a daily or weekly basis, and, you know, they keep extending the deadline here, so. You know, I'm reading, I'm staying up on things, but there's not a lot of new information coming out or anything, you know, anything concrete.
Bob, so Bob, considering,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Murray.
I was going to say, considering how the team was playing when everything was shut down, yeah, really all season, looking like they were poised for another cup run, would you feel personally kind of ripped off if they do decide to cancel the season?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, it's something that can't be avoided, too. I mean, it's not something that, you know, it's not a lockout or it's not a strike. You know what I mean? It's something that just, it's an unfortunate event that's going on, if that's what you want to call it, sorry, however you want to frame it. But it's not something that, you know, was greed related or, you know, on either side, you know, to be perceived by. It's just something that's going on and everybody's suffering for it. It's not just hockey. So, you know, I think you have to, for me, any personally, I mean, I try to keep that in perspective. I hope they come back and play. I really do, but it has to be under the right circumstances.
Maz, you have a thought for him?
No, I was going to ask the same question, just about what the price was for the Bruins relative to other teams.
Bob, my question.
Boston's, I mean, they were playing. They've had a really good season. You know, they kind of loaded up. They got a couple of trade picks in there, trade deadline deals in there, you know, trying to get them acclimated into it. They look good. You know, it doesn't mean anything once the playoffs start, but they look good. It would have been an exciting, you know, start to the playoffs anyhow.
Do you think any players would break ranks and not go to North Dakota, Saskatoon, if hockey has to do what these other sports are doing, quarantine in a hotel, empty arenas, neutral site for months, you know, let's just even call it 2 months. It's not 4.5 months, 2-3 months. Do you think there's any players that would balk at that and decline to do it?
Hadn't thought about that. I doubt it. I think it would take an awful lot not to, as long as they get the, you know, health-wise, get the go-ahead,
right,
and the all-clear. I wouldn't see why a player would say no, other than the fact that maybe, you know, maybe they just, their beliefs are that, you know, that it's not safe, it's not healthy, or it's not, you know, they don't have the green light. But it sounds like, I mean, I would expect everybody to go if they get the green light.
Bobby, how do you think these guys are wired? Like, I mean, I know a lot of former players who, my guess is a lot of them would be like, yeah, give me the freaking coronavirus. I'll get the flu, and then I'll be done for 2 weeks, and I'll come back, and I'll be fine. Because I don't know, these teams, it feels like there's always a flu or a virus rifling through the locker room, and guys get sick, and they come back, and, oh, by the way, they're young in their 20s. They feel impervious anyway. Like, do you think there's a fear factor of the thing even with these guys, or do you feel like they're impervious to it?
That's a better question for them. I don't know. I guess you always have a little sense of invincibility when you're a player. You know what I mean? You know, you're young, you're strong, you're rarely sick. You know, you're just you have a sense of invincibility. You know, where you can do anything. So I'm sure that there's a lot of players that have that feeling, but. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there's a new generation coming in, too. Maybe they've got a completely different feeling to that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, millennials, soft.
Absolutely.
All right, Bobby, again, just to sum up, you don't feel very confident they're coming back.
No, I said I'm trying to remain optimistic. I really am.
And I
think that, yeah, sure. I mean, with every day and with every pushback right now or whatever, we May 15th or something now, I heard today. So, I mean, every time, you know, there's another week passes, it gets pushed back a little bit more. They're talking about playing in the summer. So, I mean, that's uncharted territory. I mean, so everything's uncharted territory right now, and it has been. So I'm trying to remain optimistic. That's the best I can give you right now as far as I feel.
Okay, Bobby. If I were you, I'd be Googling Grand Forks, North Dakota. And
check
in. Okay.
I played there.
All right, there you go. You'll be back at some point.
And Saskatoon as well.
All right. Bobby, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
See you, Bob.
Guys, stay healthy. Stay
you
safe.
Too.
You too.
Okay,
thanks,
Bob Beers joins us here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. If you want to weigh in on that, oops, I just hung up on Guy in Boston, which is the exact opposite thing of what I wanted to do. Guy, you can call us back. You can all give us a jingle at 617-779-0985. We reset our top story of the day, which is there's a certain birthday that we're celebrating here in Boston, major sports figure's birthday, and putting in perspective what that age means for one Bill Belichick. We'll discuss that after Murray's 90-second update here, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.